Taking a look now at how you and I can use our digital camera a little better. Or maybe you just purchased a digital camera. So we'll talk about using that new digital camera. Jack Zosha of Spring Grove, Minnesota, has taught photography at Western Technical College in La Crosse. He's in the lifelong learning program. He created a mixed media CD. It's titled How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. And he's written articles for Shutterbug and eDigital Photo and Imaging. So, and he's been a guest with us several times. I tell you, we had him on once, and he did such a wonderful job. We had so much response that we've asked him back again and again. So he's back with us. And if you have some questions about using your digital camera or, you know, or composing or extras that you can use or purchase to or maybe get for free online to make your images that much better. Well, Jack, I tell you what, it's got lots of good information for you. So give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and with your comments. And Jack's with us by phone. Jack, hi. Thanks for coming back and being with us again.
Well, thank you for having me back on. I sure appreciate it.
Well, I'm really glad to have you back. There are some new, what they call high-capacity cards.
Yes, and this is going to cause a little bit of confusion if people don't read carefully when they go to the store. One of the predominant storage cards used by cameras is called an SD card. It's a little tiny thing. It's about the size of a postage stamp. And up till now, they've only held up to 2 gigabytes worth of storage. Now, frankly, 2 gigabytes is a lot of storage.
Yeah.
Years ago, you couldn't even buy them in that size. Well, they've managed to figure out a way to make them now hold between 4 and 16 gigabytes, which amazes me. The trouble is that they, in order to do it, they had to change something in the internal structure of the card, and that means that only the newer cameras that are marked HCSD, as opposed to just plain SD, will be able to use the new card.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So if you're lucky, if you look at the bottom of your camera, right where you put the where you open the little door, you should see HCSD if it's a relatively new camera. And these are not necessarily only expensive cameras. I picked up a on-sale point-and-shoot for $75 that took the new HC cards. And if you don't have that, you will not be able to use the card. It doesn't mean that your life is over. They're still making the older cards. And as a matter of fact, for a lot of people, I suggest not putting all your eggs in one basket. I'd almost rather have two gigabyte cards if I was taking a trip around the world, because what would happen if you lost or broke the one card that you had?
Yeah, absolutely. So There's an upside and a downside to it.
Yeah, in addition to that, you'll also notice on the new high-capacity cards a little number in a circle, for example, 2, 3, or 4. These have to do with how fast these cards will work, the 2 being the slowest, the 4 being the fastest. This is only for people who have cameras that will take advantage of that kind of speed. It's like if you put rocket fuel in my old car, it won't go any faster. But if you have a high-speed digital SLR with a burst mode and you put in the number 4 card, it will work faster and respond better than if you put in a number 2. But you really have to read the specifications of your camera and of the card before you spend your money.
Yeah, absolutely. Karen in Portage has a question for you. Karen, hello.
Hello. I have a two-part question. First, let me clarify. I'm the person who just moved from the 110 to the 35-millimeter automatic.
Okay.
I take... tried other people's digitals to take pictures of the jewelry I make. I use gemstones. I use irregular surface crystal clusters. I'm looking to get a camera that I can figure out, similar to a box camera, that I can take pictures of the jewelry and get very clear, clean pictures, and then also how I can put those onto a Windows 98 computer or a XP compact, and then I'll hang up and listen.
Wow. Okay.
Thank you.
Let's take the first part about the camera. Virtually all cameras now have a macro setting, macro meaning close-up. There's usually a little tulip symbol that's on the actual case of the camera, or sometimes is in the actual menu that's on the back screen. And when you set it for that setting, it sets the lens to take a much closer picture. Now, in addition to that, most cameras now are 5, 6, 7 megapixels. Some of them are even 10 and 12. So if you set the camera for the macro setting and go as close as you possibly can, it still may not be as close as you would like for jewelry. But because you've got this like 7 megapixel camera, you can then crop the portion of the picture that is good. Mm-hmm. And then that will be good enough to put up on your website. As a matter of fact, it may even be a little bit too large. It's amazing. You know, the typical website picture is in the pixel range, maybe 500 square pixels, which is nothing. And so even the most modest camera usually takes a picture that is too big for use on the web.
All right. So so you really shouldn't have you need to – any of the cameras can do this.
Right. I think another part of it is, in addition to the actual camera, and it would help to have a little tabletop tripod to steady the image. Yeah. The other thing is to look into lighting. I've seen over at a couple of stores these little kits that are designed to take pictures for online auctions. They cost around $50. They're basically a nylon box, and they come with two little lights on tripods. And they're a miniature studio. They're perfect for product photography. Again, they're made by a company I believe called Digital is a brand name. And they unfold. There's a little blue fabric, a little white fabric, and some translucent sides in the top. And the idea is you can put your item in there and isolate it from the background. But also there are two small electric lights that you can shine and you can move around. And those will really help with jewelry.
And how expensive is this?
The one I saw was $55. That includes a tripod, two lights, and a little box.
Well, that's really cheap.
I've used it a couple of times now, and I'm kind of happy with them. I haven't used the lights as much as I've used the box, but especially for jewelry, if you want to catch that little bit of glint and things like that, that would work out really well.
Good advice. Let's go to Pete in La Crosse. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Larry, and to your guests. I just wanted to mention that in regards to taking extreme close-up pictures, for my job, I routinely take pictures of items maybe a quarter of an inch across that fill the entire frame. And the way I do that is I take an ordinary 7-power Hastings magnifier, and I hold it right on the camera lens, directly in front of it. And even with my older digital camera, one of the old floppy disks ones, it autofocuses right through the magnifier, and it does a great job. And I had previously done it with a 10-power Hastings, which the jeweler who called in might be more familiar with. That one takes quite a steady hand because it's a smaller lens. But the 7-power Hastings works fabulous for taking extreme close-up pictures. So people should keep that in mind when they have bugs to photograph to send to Phil or whatever they have that's really, really small.
That's a very good idea. As a matter of fact, I wrote an article for one of the photo magazines about 8 years ago specifically on that, where I literally held a magnifying glass in front of one of these cicadas and got this huge bug-eyed looking critter. But again, as your caller said, the higher quality, the optic that you put in front of the lens, the better off it'll be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Magnifier helps, but a good magnifier makes just a remarkable picture. And, nothing fancy on the camera, just the same old camera. It just allows me to get so much closer.
Yeah.
I'm glad someone else is verifying my idea for gadgets. That's great.
Yeah, it works well.
Thanks, Pete. Sure. Appreciate the call. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Talking today with Jack Socha of Spring Grove, Minnesota, photography expert, and talking about digital cameras and their use. Dorothy in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi, thanks. I was calling because I wondered if your guest had any tips or tricks for taking pictures with a camera phone. That's on a cell phone.
Go ahead.
I do the settings, that are embedded in the camera, and some of the pictures I take are actually really good, and others are kind of crummy, and it's more or less hit or miss.
There's a couple of things going on with camera phones, and I will confess I have never owned a camera phone. But in the USA, we are several years behind, say, the Japanese in their phones in terms of the number of pixels that the cameras have. So we are still in the almost the way we were 10 years ago with cameras. The number of pixels in the camera phones is simply not as high as a standalone camera. And in addition to that, we always have the problem of the lens opening not being very large and therefore not a lot of light getting through, which means in a lower light situation, you're probably going to get, in your case, telephone shake as opposed to camera shake. So I think it is a bit of a hit-and-miss proposition, and until the telephone cameras dramatically improve along with the entire transmission infrastructure to go along with them, I'm afraid they're still going to be pretty much second place to a regular camera.
You know, I wonder why this technology hasn't been imported from Japan.
I think it's, you know, again, I'm not an expert on this particular topic, but my understanding is that the transmission infrastructure is better in some of the other countries at this point.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Our guest today, Jack Socha, join us again with your questions and comments. Let's see, I've got a question for you. What's the most important button on a digital camera?
Well, aside from the power button, the one I really talk about in my classes and in the CD is the plus-minus exposure button. And this is a button that not everybody knows is there, or if they know it's there, they don't know how to access it. What the plus-minus button does is it adds or subtracts exposure to what the camera would normally set. Now, this button is found either on the camera body itself. You'll see a button or a dial and someplace near it a little plus and a little minus. In some cases, on some cameras, it's also found on the screen menu, so you have to go to a menu in order to access it. It's much better if you can actually get it off the camera body.
You know what? I'm going to break in right here and have you hold that thought, Jack, and we'll come back and we'll talk some more about that plus-minus exposure button with Jack Socha in just a minute or two. Stay with us here on the IdeasNet. We're talking about using your digital camera now. Larry Mueller here and my guest Jack Socha of Spring Grove, Minnesota Photography, digital photography expert. He's created a media CD, a mixed media CD. It's called How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought, written lots of articles. And we'll be talking with him about how you can use your digital camera. Join us at 800-642-1234. Or in Madison at 263-1890, we'll get you on pretty quickly. And Jack, you're saying that maybe the most important button on your digital camera is your exposure button, the plus minus button.
Yeah, there's a couple of reasons for that. Most people do not want to play around with the f-stops and the shutter speeds. In fact, on many of these cameras, you can't even do it anymore. But what you can do is you can make the picture lighter or darker by invoking that plus-minus button. And so I'll give you two examples. The first one is we've got the fall colors coming up in a matter of weeks, and sometimes you stand under a tree and the light is coming through and you take a picture and you look at your picture later on and the colors aren't saturated. They're kind of washed out. It's just too much light is coming through them. So what you would do is you'd locate your plus-minus button and there would be a little line that would show up on your screen, plus and minus, kind of like a thermometer, only sideways. And you would move it down towards the minus symbol. And literally on the screen, you'll see the image get darker as it changes the exposure. This tends to what they call saturate the color. And you can experiment with how much you want to lower it until it gets the way you want. On the other hand, if you're taking a picture of somebody and they are backlit, they're lit from behind, they frequently come out a silhouette.
Yes.
In that case, you invoke the little plus minus button and you move it towards the plus sign to add more exposure until the person is lightened up and you can actually see what they look like.
And that is a very nice thing to have.
it's probably the most used button on the cameras that I have. Now, the trick is that in most cases, not all, you have to take the camera off the so-called decision-free setting, the full auto. There's usually a button next to it or a dial next to it that says P for program. That will let you use it, but you have to take it off that decision-free setting in order to make use of that particular control.
One of our internet listeners from San Francisco is online next, David. David in San Francisco, hello to you.
Hey, hi, Larry and Jack. Hey, you know, and by the way, the stream's coming in great, so...
Good.
Yeah, you can get it easily. Hey, you know, out here in San Francisco, we, of course, had .com just south of us, and so San Francisco is about as full of computer tricks as you can possibly get. And, of course, Wi-Fi is one real common one. So I wanted to ask you about Wi-Fiing photographs. Now, one of the things I wanted to ask you about was, you know, of course we hear the danger of cell phones, and so that's just talking, and so there's a very minimal amount of information or data that's going over the telephone line to get to the other side, and that pulse is a hazard to us. Now, a photograph is about, what, 1,000 or 10,000 times more information that's being sent. And so if you're using Wi-Fi, are you actually creating a thousands-fold increase in radioactive transmissions?
Well, I'm not an expert on that. I will say that the Wi-Fi is talking back and forth between computers and whatever other source it is, whether there's data being transmitted or not. So it's kind of like having an overhead power line near your house. That's transmitting power whether you've got your lights on.
Sure, yeah. Well, I'm just, you know, looking, for example, there are a lot of reporters out there in Denver right now for the convention, and they're sending cell phone interviews and things like that. So, you know, they're with a cell phone, you can tell when they heat up that they're sending out, you know, a lot of transmission. And whether or not it's back and forth, I guess if you're in between it, you're just going to get cooked back and forth or mostly from one direction. Yeah,
you know,
I just was wondering about that. The more Wi-Fi locations you have, how many different conversations and how much cooking is going on there?
That would be something that you'd have to talk to the phone guys about. I do remember a funny story when I was out in digital world out there many years ago during a previous election campaign when the photographers were shooting the presidential candidates and then hopping on board the planes. And they were allowed to leave their cell phones on board these presidential planes. And they were trying to transmit the photos before the plane reached a certain altitude, in which case the cell would drop. And every time they managed to get the photo off the phone and to their main headquarters, they would yell out, "Winner, winner, chicken dinner." But that's the extent of my knowledge on how dangerous or lack of danger there is with Wi-Fi and digital cameras, I'm afraid.
David, I'm going to have to ask some others that I have on the program about that. It's an interesting question. We'll bring it up when we have one of the other experts on, and we'll see what we can come up with. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Harry in Princeton, it's your turn. Hi, Harry.
Appleton, actually. Just to answer the previous caller's questions, the problem with cell phone is not the amount of data that it transmits, but the proximity of the transceiver to your brain. Electromagnetic energy decreases as the cube of the distance. So, you know, a Wi-Fi thing that's a foot away from you doing an incredible baud rate is much less radiation to your head than a cell phone right next to your head.
Stuck right into your ear. Okay, good. Thanks for coming and giving us that answer. That makes some sense to me. Jack, what do you think?
I couldn't have said it any better.
Thanks, Harry. Thanks.
You know, there are now also some, speaking of high-techy stuff here, there's this thing called Bluetooth, which is kind of a short-distance transmission, and there are now some cameras that have built-in Bluetooth in them, so you just place them near your computer, and it transfers the pictures without any wires.
Yeah.
It's just getting crazy. It really is.
Amazing. Anna Marie and Gillette, we'll go to you next. Hi, thank you for calling.
You're welcome. The question I have is this. I have a Kodak EasyShare camera. It's got a Schneider lens, an excellent lens. It's about 2 years old, and it came with a battery pack that has the two batteries fused together already, and you just drop it in.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Those are very, very expensive to operate. So I was told to go to the battery charger and energize a rechargeable batteries for it. But since I have it on a high-resolution setting, I'm charging batteries for it like every 4 or 5 pictures, which I think is kind of ridiculous.
That is, I've got a couple of Kodaks, and I've got one that takes those two rechargeable cells, and you can put in just two regular ones, just two AA's that are rechargeable. And a little bit you have to look into is the capacity of the batteries. The batteries are measured in something called milliamps, or MA, and they're written on the side of the battery. And a few years ago, they were 1,800 milliamps, and now they're up to about 2,500 milliamps. So if you had the battery, how long have you had those batteries, for example, now? Have you had it for a couple of years, 3 years?
You're talking about the ones that are already in
the ones that you're recharging that are not lasting very long. How long have you had them?
Oh, I just bought them a couple of weeks ago.
Okay. And are you leaving them in the charger all night, or what kind of charger is it that you've got there?
It's an Energizer charger, and excuse me, it's I basically have to leave them in all night until.
Yeah, most of these chargers take, unless they specify that they're a short one, they take 8 hours to charge.
Mm-hmm.
And the first few times you charge the batteries, they don't necessarily hold as much as they do later on. Now, there's a couple of things you can do to extend the life of the batteries, which I recommend for everybody, and that is when you're not needing a flash, turn the automatic flash feature off. That'll save you a bunch of power. And also, if you're not using that, if you're not looking at the pictures right afterwards, you can turn that preview off as well, because the flash and the screen are two things that use up a great deal of power.
Yeah, interesting.
Oh, okay. Now, on that preview, on the pictures, how would you know what to save unless you actually use it?
Well, you can look at the setup menu. It'll tell you how long it's going to preview, in some cases a few seconds, in some cases longer. You can turn the length of time down, or you can turn it off. I personally don't recommend editing your pictures by what you see on that little screen. I like to wait till you get home and look at them on your big computer screen instead.
Okay. That sounds good. You've been a lot of help. So,
all right.
Do you think that the pack that comes with them, though, with the camera, what is the advantage to that? Because why does that burn out so quick?
Well, the Kodak has what they call an easy share system, where you get the camera and you can buy a little dock for it, and these special battery packs, which are just two AA's that are stuck together, and you drop it in the little dock and press a button, it loads the pictures into your computer and it recharges the batteries.
Okay, that's what I had with my older.
Yeah, and so that's basically the idea. But I would try to get the highest capacity batteries you can find, and check several things on the camera, like there's ways you can tell it to turn off after a certain amount of time, things like that. There are ways that, just like with a house, you can conserve energy by turning certain things off that you're not using.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks. Anne Marie for calling. Appreciate it. Joe in Wausau, it's your turn. Joe, hello.
Hi. I'm calling to respond to a previous caller asking about the dangers of Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Well, cell phones use microwaves. So cell phones, there's a huge dispute on whether or not those are dangerous. But Wi-Fi uses a 2.4 gigahertz radio frequency, much like the cordless phones of the mid-90s used.
Yeah.
So it's completely harmless. It's just as harmful as your radio or your cordless phone. So you shouldn't be worried at all about Wi-Fi. Cell phones are a different story because they use microwave radiation, and that's a shorter wavelength that can be a little bit more dangerous.
All right. Thank you, Joe. Thanks very much for calling. Another person weighing in on that, and it makes sense. John in Madison, your turn. Hi, John.
Hi. I just have a question about image stabilization. I replaced an old 2-megapixel camera point-and-shoot with a 6-megapixel Nikon, and it keeps warning me that my pictures are blurry, and do I want to save them? I cannot hold my hand still enough for this camera to get a good picture, and it's kind of a shame because my old 2-megapixel ended up having better pictures. Now, the reason I like having 6 megapixels is it gives me a lot more to work with when I decide to edit the pictures later on at home. Is there any tricks or tips that your guest might have as to how to get better pictures and more stable images?
Okay, a couple of things. Number one is that the ISO, the sensitivity of these cameras, the ability to raise it up higher is better than it has been in previous years. So the first thing to do is to check your manual and see how high you can set the ISO. It used to be 400, now it's closer to 1600, and I've seen them even higher than that. Experiment with the higher ISOs that will give you a higher shutter speed and see which ones you can live with, because as you get the higher ISOs in place, there's a little less image quality involved. But you should hit a point where you say, hey, this cuts down the shake, and B, the image quality is good enough for what I want. So do that first to see what happens. The other thing is a lot depends on how fast your lens is. I want to mention that we something about the CD in a few minutes, that we've done some new talk about exposure to help explain this. We suddenly realized it's been 30 years since people have dealt with lens openings and shutter speeds.
Yeah.
And so a lot of folks are still trying to use the cameras in lighting situations where the camera simply will not pick a high enough shutter speed to hand hold. And that's why you have to learn to raise the ISO. But the relationship between that ISO, the shutter speed, and the lens opening is something that's a little bit in the dark, pardon the pun, for a lot of people because they haven't dealt with it for 30 years.
Talk a little bit about your CD for us.
Well, we produced a CD that was called How to Use a Digital Camera You Just Bought, and it covers a lot of the things we're talking about. What we've just recently done, and the next batch that we're doing that will be going out Monday, we've left the complicated information about shutter speeds and f-stops in there, so people who have cameras with adjustable lenses can actually understand what they're doing. But we've also done a simplified version that just explains what exposure is in a camera and why you can't get a steady shot in the dark. Now, for your listeners and for everybody who has already gotten the previous version, if you go to our website, acpress.com, we have an audio area, and I've placed that audio explanation on the website so you don't feel like you got the old version.
Okay.
But in my classes, we've just seen so many cameras now that no longer have any aperture priority, shutter priority, no f-stops mentioned or anything. All it is like it blinks. And so for those people who don't want to know about f-stops and shutter speeds, we've done a simplified explanation, which is now on the CD, but also is on the website for you to listen to. And then for those who want to delve into it deeper, the other information, the more complicated information, is still going to be there. So you have it both ways. If you want information about the CD, you can call us. It's 800-647-8273. Back in the old days before CDs, we used to produce audio cassettes on Windows. So this used to be 800-647-TAPE. What's a tape? But the CD is $12.95 plus shipping, and it works on PCs. We are experimenting with a version that Mac users can access. If you're a Mac user and you want to drop me a note, I will email you when the Mac version is available. You can email John S., that's J-O-H-N-S, at springgrove.coop, as in coop.
Mm-hmm.
And I will let you know. In fact, I may be looking for a couple of folks to be a couple of beta testers for me on that one.
All right. Good to know. And the website again is?
acpress.com, acpress.com. We still have the page up there of the free software, the same software that I use every day for image editing that doesn't cost you a dime. And we've got the information on some of the newer batteries that came out. Plus, I did put up a page about this thing with the new high-capacity cards, so you can actually see that they don't look any different, but they're marked differently.
All right. Let's go to Mike next. Mike, hello to you.
Yes, thanks for taking my call, Larry.
Sure.
A couple of things here. I bought one of those Easy Share codecs as well. It's a... not sure what the number is here, but anyway... I'm somewhat disappointed with it. Oh, it's a 653. When I take, let's say I'm taking a picture of a team of horses pulling a wagon, and I have to get it all in my viewfinder, and I get my zoom adjusted, and I think it's a medium shot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
By the time I get it on the chip, or I'm going to develop it, let's say, on the computer, it's way far away. And I could have filled the screen. I could have sucked it in a lot closer.
So
I'm disappointed. That's one problem. I got two other things, and I'll take my answer. The other thing is, if you could repeat that about this negative icon again, I had something happen. I couldn't hear all the...
Oh, sure.
Back a time or two ago. And then one last thing, I can't... for the life of me, and I looked in the book, and it's not there. I had it up there once, and I never had it again. I just set the time and the date.
Yeah,
okay.
That and your VCR. Hey, I know how that works. Regarding the digital cameras that are, you would call them consumer cameras as opposed to professional cameras, cameras that cost a few hundred dollars or less versus cameras that cost, say, $1,000 or more, is the response time on the professional cameras is much faster. One thing that we do in the class, and I talk about on the CD, is locking in the exposure and the focus by pressing the shutter button down halfway, and then at the decisive moment, continuing to press the button down and take the picture. it does take a little while for the camera to process the 6 megapixels worth of data and get it into the card. Now, that's one place where if your camera does benefit from a faster card, you might get a faster card. But before you go out and buy a faster card, check your manual and see whether it actually benefits, because that might slow down the time process if the card is waiting for the camera. If the card's waiting for the camera, then there's nothing you can do about it. But if the camera's waiting for the card, a faster card might possibly speed up the process.
Now, in terms of he looks in the viewfinder and he sees the wagon and the horse fills the whole viewfinder. But then when he goes to take to look at the picture, it's much further away.
There's a couple things going on there, and we talk about that in the class too. Because number one, people tend to see in their mind that they're filling the frame, but when they get home, they're not. In my case, if I use the optical viewfinder, or in the case of that Kodak, it's got an electronic finder that you can look into. If you wear glasses, sometimes that extra distance that your glasses give doesn't allow you to see the edges of the picture.
Oh.
And so sometimes you have to use the regular screen that's on the back of the camera. But even in that case, sometimes you're so focused on the subject that you don't look at all the extra space around. That's a very common problem. There was some famous photojournalist who said, if you want more impact in your pictures, step closer.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid that is possibly the case.
And did you mention how to set the time and date?
Oh, yeah. Now, the time and date, you've really got to look in your manual for that one, because it's something that you don't do very often. There frequently is something on the dial or in the on-screen menu. It frequently has, like, a picture of a monkey wrench.
Uh-huh.
And that's your setup menu. That's where you go in and you tell it what language you want it to use, things like that. And be careful with the language thing, because you can end up with Chinese in there, which is great if you can read it. But that's normally where you can set the date.
All right, I think we covered everything.
We had one lady who wanted to know about erasing all her pictures on the card.
Oh, yeah.
Most cameras give you a choice of erasing the one picture or erasing all the pictures. And, of course, the other thing you can do is you can go back to that same menu we just talked about with the monkey wrench, and you can format the card, which will erase everything.
All right. On to John in Germantown. John, hello.
Hello, Larry. On cell phones, the original house phones are 49 megahertz, and they went to 2.4. Now they're up to 5.8 gigahertz. Now, cell phones, I think, run between 900 to 1,000 megahertz. I'm not sure. But it's kind of a misnomer to say microwave. It's an extremely high frequency, but when people think microwave, they think microwave towers or they think microwave ovens. Totally different thing. And I hope sometime you might get somebody on the program that can discuss cell phones and those kinds of things. It would be a great idea.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what's happening, too, is we are seeing this integration of cameras into telephones, which is, frankly, the industry was caught by surprise by that. But for my money, I still like having a camera. Or they could put the phone in my camera, but I'll look kind of silly walking around going, hello. You know, I think I'm one of these guys who likes a coffee cup for coffee and a toaster to make toast and not to do both at the same time.
Yeah, I've used the camera phones myself, and I'm frankly, as you say, they're just the quality isn't there, and there's something about holding that phone. It's just
well, also now we're getting into privacy issues. There's places, it's something that came out of left field that nobody thought about, and who knows what'll be happening 2 or 3 years from now? They'll probably have a camera built into your shoe.
Jack, what's your email address again?
John S. at springgrove.coop, that's COOP. You also can go to the website acpress.com and see it. And I do suggest that anybody who is wanting the basic explanation of exposure, if they haven't gotten the CD or if they got the first version of it, to go to the website, go to the audio section. They can just listen to this 4 or 5 minute thing, that which will also be on the CD, but the CD version, of course, has illustrations to go along with it, as everything else does.
Thank you, Jack, so much. I'll look forward to another visit from you.
Oh, anytime.
Thank you. Jack Socha of Spring Grove, Minnesota. And he is a digital camera expert, of course. And his CD is called How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. And thank you all for listening. Please stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.